Hello, hello, hello. How are you doing? Oh my goodness, that is the last time that I get to say this because it's the final episode of this podcast. I can't believe it's here. I felt nervous in the run-up to this, but thankfully, I have somebody to accompany me in this final episode. My husband, Em, is back with me. You may recall that he was on episode 200, and I thought, who better to wrap up this podcast with but my husband, and also the person who came up with the idea for this podcast. So, hey, welcome back, Emin.
Thank you. I'm pretty honored to be here, but I was just thinking about this, that how come I wasn't part of episode one? I'll take what I'm given. So yeah, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
You know, now that I'm finishing this podcast, I guess because I didn't come in with it with a certain number of episodes in mind, I guess I always thought that you would be on more episodes, and here we are, like, this is your second time coming on it. And actually, you know, in the previous episode, I asked people, you know, if they want to send in questions for the show, you know, to send them in. And what was interesting is, one, a lot of them were just messages, not just really, I don't mean it that way, but were messages thanking, you know, me for the show, but a lot of them as well were like, please tell Emin thank you for encouraging you to do this podcast and how much they appreciate you. So I wanted to acknowledge that. So anyway, I'm really, really happy to have you here, and I'm getting ready to dive into these questions. There have been some funny ones, I'll just warn you. And actually, I haven't properly looked at them, and he hasn't seen them at all. So
just before we do that, I think I just want to also acknowledge that, I know this has been a journey for you, and I've kind of appreciated that, this has been a big part of your own sort of, you know, who you are. And so I think I understand where you're coming from. I know that this has not been an easy decision, but look, I'm proud of what you've achieved. And who knows, it might not be the last one, you know. You might find you missed the buzz and I want to come back. But anyway, never mind. It's good to see you. Yeah, good to have you.
I mean, thank you for saying that. I mean, that's what we're sat together here for this. Last time on episode 200, he was in his office up in the house and I was down here in the studio. And I felt, actually, let's be together for this, because even though I know it's the right decision, it also feels really emotional to do it. Because also, this isn't just me ending the podcast. You know, I've also said that I won't be updating Baggage Reclaim anymore. So there's this whole sort of culmination of a almost 18-year journey with Baggage Reclaim. And the podcast has been going on and off, you know, for 8 years. And actually, myself and Em have been together since 6 months into me starting Baggage Reclaim. So I'm really glad that you're here with me, and thank you for that acknowledgement. But also thank you for, like, he knows what it's like to live with somebody who is creative and who's writing and who's sharing themselves online, and you are just so supportive. You hold space for that, you don't judge me for that, and you supported me in helping me figure out what this is. And you've never been like, what the hell are you doing, or why on earth would you want to go and end that? You understand what I've put into this, but also what I'm ready to let go of and how I need to move forward.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. Get my real voice there.
So before I start getting all emotional, let's go into some of these questions. Some are aimed at me, some are aimed at both of us. So let's go with the first one, one of the first ones here, which is, how was or is M in his relationship with No? Is there a story behind his self-awareness? And I'm going to guess that they're asking this because I think maybe what people picked up from episode 200 with you, but I guess little bits that I shared over the years, is I guess people maybe feel that you're quite self-aware. You know, you have a good sense of yourself.
There is a self-awareness that comes with realizing that everybody sort of has a point. Now, in my work life, I tend to be somebody who, actually, when I read some of the, before I actually got published, I think I was able to read some of what you're writing and in one of the earlier books you got released, And there was a bit where I think I never assumed that I would be somebody who would fall into any of those categories. So that was sort of interesting to read one of the categories. I can't remember what it was now, but it sort of I seemed to fit into that. I'm not sure if I'm answering the question in the right way, but essentially it was about, I never thought of myself as being somebody who would do something without actually, you know, thinking I should say no to this. I think I would just done it willingly. But I think there was this thing in me that wants to strive to sort of get to the end of something. And sometimes people may take advantage of that, but you're not self-aware that actually that is what is going on here. So it's interesting, my boss the other day said to him, oh, I don't think I want to do 12-hour shifts anymore, and I want to, you know, I'm going to go back to doing like 8-9 hour shifts, you know, that's the norm. And I think maybe this is part of this I want to say no thing, but I don't think I acknowledge it in that way. So I think to answer the question, I probably would say that I do things unknowingly, and I think maybe there is some self-awareness, but at the same time it's about this desire to not leave things half-baked and get it done. So maybe in some ways I am susceptible to being a people pleaser, if that's the right word.
Yeah, I think I think I've talked about this on the podcast before, but there was this enlightening moment that I had where I got to see the difference between my relationship with no and your relationship with no. So, like, I know that you want to, I don't necessarily think you go from a place of, I want to please others, but you're a pretty easygoing guy. You, as you say, you like to get things done. But at the same time, you also generally, I would say, certainly at home or with friends, you won't necessarily do something that you don't want to do. Mm. And there was this very funny morning where, and I'm not sure if you remember this, but it was must have been maybe a couple of years back, and he was like, right, because I must point out, Emin is very bouncy, buoyant in the morning, so he's a real morning person. He wakes up, he never wakes up in a bad mood. He's super chatty, whereas I like to ease myself into the morning. So on that particular day, he starts with this thing of, oh, our mortgage is due to be renewed in a few months. And we get into this conversation about it. But then I think he starts to think that he's annoying me with what he's saying. So he then was like, right, I'm going to go off and get my breakfast. So recovering people pleaser that I am, my head gets a bit busy and I'm in the shower and I'm going, oh, I think he thinks that I'm being funny with him about this. And I'm going through this whole sort of worry thing. And then I start laughing to myself because I realized that he had walked out of that room and he hadn't given the conversation another thought, that he had gone downstairs and he was probably laughing at something on Twitter, eating his breakfast, kicking back and getting ready for work. So I get myself ready and I go downstairs and I say to him, so about earlier on, I just want to make clear. And he went, what? And I was like, yeah, so you actually haven't given any thought whatsoever to that conversation we just had. And he was like, no. And I burst out laughing because I realized that because I'm a recovering people pleaser, and I mean, I was a chronic people pleaser, my default is to, it's like there's a computer running, working out, is this going to inconvenience somebody? What does this person need? What does this person want? Whereas he has this greater sense of, he doesn't do things from this place of, is it going to inconvenience somebody or not inconvenience somebody? He doesn't necessarily go, I had to think about everybody else's needs before mine. So he'll say yes when he wants to say yes, and he'll say no when he wants to say no. And as a result, it also means that in instances where you think that maybe my people pleaser has shown up, that you will also turn around and go, actually, you don't need to do that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I think you're right to the sense that I think I try and analyze the situation. And I think in some cases you realize that there's some conversations like that one that you think, okay, broach it and move on. And then at least it's now out there and you can then follow up a bit later. So I try to analyze that situation and understand, is this something that's going to inconvenience you, right, or not? But at the same time, I also know that I don't want to be in a position where I'm saying yes to something that I actually don't really want to say that. So it's a balance, but I think the older you get, you know, I'm getting old, I'm in age now.
Yeah, he turns 50 in a few weeks' time.
Yeah, I realize that actually I've come through experience, and sometimes if I realize the situation is going to create some sort of friction in some ways, either in, you know, then I would probably hold back my views more because I don't want to create that. But if it's something that needs to be said, then I think I will say it. And I think that's what people know about me.
That's fair. Michelle Nichols Counseling on Instagram asks, do you do any intentional practices to check in on your relationship? So I guess this is aimed at the two of us. And I sort of glimpsed this question earlier on, and I thought it was interesting because we don't, I feel like we have a sense of, like when we know that we've sort of been very caught up in being busy with stuff. So maybe, I mean, before COVID, it could have been because we were traveling, you know, particularly Em with his work, or just life got super busy. Whereas now, you know, we're both mainly at home, but life can still get pretty busy where for me, it feels like actually if we're not sort of getting to have, you know, a proper chat, proper hangout, we're not getting a few belly laughs in, you know, having a bit of a giggle, then it feels like, oh, actually we're a bit too busy there. We're a bit caught up in other things. So we'll be quite, I feel like even though we haven't necessarily said, oh, that's a marker for us, when we notice that, we both go, oh, let's spend time, you know, let's do something. And that might simply be that we'll end up chatting away, you know, in the evening about something and catching up, or we'll go and do something together. But I think that that's about as far as it goes because we're in an ongoing dialogue with each other. So it's not like either one of us, as far as I know anyway, unless you want to drop that in there, but as far as I know, neither one of us are sitting on some big secret or big resentment.
Well, for a start, I definitely, if I had that problem, I wouldn't be sitting here today. But I agree. I don't think I've ever consciously, well, maybe that's not true. You may say, is everything okay or something like that? But it's not something I would consciously think, let's check in on our relationship. Is something going wrong? As you say, it's more of a subconscious thing. And what will tend to happen then is, yeah, you know, we may go to the garden center, we may go to, you know, the supermarket, or we may go for coffee or something like that, or just go for a walk. So I think in that sense, maybe that is an unconscious thing that we both think, oh, we haven't really seen each other, spend much time with each other. Let's do something a little bit, you know, to just rekindle some of that conversation through us. But no, I definitely know in my mind, I don't consciously check in.
Yeah, I think as well, when we've had, you know, when we're sort of out of routine, so we're away somewhere or just somewhere different and maybe the kids are not around, we'll end up getting into really big, deep conversations about, like, and it's not like we're talking about anything that's like, oh, we've not talked about this before, but it's like we get to kind of go deep on something because we feel like, oh, we're in this space and we're chilling out, and we just get into a deep philosophical conversation about that. So I think that that's another way that we sort of check in. But I like to feel that if either one of us were like, oh, it feels like something's really off here, we'd pick up on it, I think, relatively quickly, I think I'd like to think.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting one, obviously, because the times when I've looked at your face, I've gone, her face, you know, like with my daughter and, you know, with Nia and yourself, I think your face tells a thousand stories, and sometimes I can pick up from the facial expressions that something is not quite right, or by your activities, the common activities you do when things aren't working for you. So I think in that sense, I've learned to pick up on those things, and that also is a cue to say, yes, check in or do something. But generally speaking, and it's not something I will necessarily do, but I will look for the signs. And I think, yeah, some of this is probably conscious because you look for cues, but other things are sort of unconscious and you just do it when you need to.
All right. Next question comes from our pal, Tamu, who decided to ask, when are we getting together for drinks next? my friend Tamu, she teaches face yoga. So I know that some of you, I think, went along to her trial class of that. And her husband, Cy, is a jazz singer. Cy Cranston, very cool guy. And so, yeah, she wanted to know when we're getting together for drinks. So this is what I meant by some of the questions that are coming in are rather funny.
Yeah, I think in my 50th year, I'm going to do a lot of drinking. So before I decide to quit. So, yeah, Tamu, anytime. you know. We can easily walk to each other's houses, so I'm happy anytime.
Becky was asking me if I plan on continuing writing and releasing more books in the future. Absolutely. I am going to basically continue sharing. I just want to reset my relationship with work and do it through new vehicles, find new avenues to do it. One of those places that I will be doing that is on Substack, which is an email newsletter platform, I guess, that is very much aimed at sort of writers and I guess content creators, where you get to share your work. It's almost like in the old style of blogging. So you get to share your work on there, share your writing on there. You can make some stuff that is available for free, other stuff that is going to be, you know, sort of based on, you know, monthly or a yearly subscription or a donation. I've got a spot set up for myself there. It's natalielu.substack.com, and I'll make sure I link to that in the show notes, which will be at baggagereclaim.co.uk/278. And if you're already on my newsletter, then you will receive a notification about making the move over there. Chalene asks, does doing the podcast / writing Baggage Reclaim give you new perspectives on your relationship? I think more so when I am talking to people. So, you know, talking to people directly, or people are messaging me on Insta or through email or whatever it might be, that when you are coming face to face with the challenges that people are going through in their own relationships, it sometimes helps you to see, oh, that's an interesting thing about conflict, or, oh, that's an interesting thing about intimacy or communication or whatever that is. So I think it's more of an indirect way, as opposed to I made this podcast or I wrote this thing and now I'm having this great big realization about our relationship. Next question comes from She Champagne on Instagram, who says, do you both go to therapy? And the answer to that is no. Although, and I can't remember which episode it is, so I'll make sure I link to it in the show notes, but I did talk about on a podcast before about how, as part of supporting one of our daughters who went through a tricky time with the onset of the pandemic, you know, grappling with anxiety and OCD that was triggered by her fears around that, that we did 6 sessions of family therapy, didn't we?
Yep.
And that was an interesting experience, because I think that the connotations around family therapy, initially we were like, what the, like, why the hell are we being asked to go to family therapy? Because you imagine it's like what you see on TV, where you're only being asked to go to family therapy because it's like you have these like big problems, you know, there's these associations. I think also you go into it and you're kind of not quite sure what to expect. But actually the reason why the family therapy was there was to help us understand what she was going through with her experiences of anxiety and OCD, but it was also to help her understand what we were going through in that experience. And we ended up, even though we were kind of a bit like, oh, what is this? We both ended up finding it useful in the end, didn't we?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think my mindset is probably therapy. Okay, what does it entail? I'm not sure if is this for me. I'm not, but I think you are correct in that maybe the first couple of sessions were a little bit, I was probably a bit timid, but I think you realize actually just talking to somebody about something does have its own benefits. And I think in that sense, it was great to be able to understand or try to understand and what, you know, she was going through. And so I think that was quite helpful. So am I against therapy? Not at all. I think actually there's a lot of value in it. But it's not something I pursued, but I wouldn't be against it in the future if that sort of thing had to happen again. But yeah, it was interesting.
I think what I found useful in it was we got to see each other through each other's eyes, but also got to understand our family unit through an outsider's eyes. And there was this moment, I think it might have been in the first or second session, where I had this realization, there were two, which was that one, Em and I had, I remember us talking about what was important to us about having family and how we wanted to interact with extended family and how we wanted to raise children. And so I had this realization when I was sitting there that we had actually done the thing that we set out to do. You know, we did not want to raise our children in dysfunction. We wanted to teach them to feel comfortable in having their boundaries and talking to us. And of course, that's a trial and error thing. But we definitely hadn't repeated patterns, I guess, that we had observed, I think, particularly with my family. And so I was like, oh. However, I also realized that because that we had essentially done what we set out to do, that there was also this realization that, yeah, okay, of course, it's not like you didn't have your challenges in childhood, but it was very different to my upbringing. And this became so crystal clear in the therapy, didn't it?
Yes.
I think there were times when the therapist was sort of like wide-eyed and leaning in at some of my sort of explaining of my childhood. And so at times there was this sense of, oh my God, like I'm the really messed up one here. And of course that is not true. And that was something for us to work through in those conversations. And the other light bulb moment I think that I had in it was realizing, you know, I'm a recovering people pleaser and perfectionist. And I sometimes get myself very stressed out about things around the house. And it had sometimes bothered me that the others, as in you and the girls, you're just a bit more chilled about that stuff. And then I had this light bulb moment where it's like, Natalie, it's only you that cares about this stuff to that degree. And you're the one who's trying to force everybody else to kind of have the same mindset. And I had to recognize that some of my stuff around stressing myself out about the house comes from my own upbringing. So I felt that there was some real awakenings, but we also talked a lot about emotions and me saying in that I don't want to, not that you had asked me to, but that I don't want to carry the emotional load in our family, that it can't just be, because sometimes the therapist was suggesting that I use my experiences to sort of get down to the kids' level and be like, oh, I went. I said, actually, it just can't be me. It has to be you too. Do you remember that? Where I just drew my line on that. And I was like, no, you have to carry some of this emotional load too. And you have to, you know, figure out some of this emotional stuff that is going on with the girls. Because, of course, it can, given the work that I do, but also the challenges that I've had, it can very easily fall to me. He's laughing now.
Yeah, but look, I understand that we're both coming from a different perspective. So I think, you know, as you say, our childhood was different. You know, I grew up partly in Sierra Leone and partly here. So I sort of had both worlds, and so I think the way I think and look at things is definitely shaped by that upbringing, and it will be completely different to the way that your life was brought up and the way you things, you know, how things look to you. What I will say though is I obviously went into those sessions with a sense of, is this for me type of mentality. I came out of it knowing that I had to, there was a bit of an emotional side that had to be let out. And the one change that I know has happened since then is really my willingness to want to talk to other people about the stuff that my children go through,
mm-hmm.
and understanding that actually it's fine to do that. Because what's been interesting since doing that is on two or three occasions talking to other parents, they have actually opened up about the issues that they're going through with their children. And you then realize actually there are a lot of people with a similar mindset or similar experiences. So I think for me, that was what came out of it. So maybe that's the emotional side you mentioned, but now there's no stigma for me. You know, if my child is going through a tough time, it makes sense for me to talk to other parents because they might be going through that. And the experiences of that can then be passed on to me and vice versa. So yeah, I know I've probably gone way past the original question, but I think that, yeah, that was a useful thing.
Yeah, I think we both had a greater understanding of each other as a result of that. And that was unexpected because that's not what we thought we were sort of going into. Claire Archie on Instagram, he's laughing already. A really good pal of ours. And actually, we worked together a lot for Baggage Reclaiming with the podcast. Wants to know, when can we go camping next? And will Emin remember his poles? So what she's referring to here is that several years back, we went to Camp Bestival, which is this family-friendly festival that happens. Is it in Somerset or something like that? I could be making that up. Dorset. So where, you know, we went camping with the kids and there's like people, you know, musicians performing and there's loads of activities to do. And one of the times when we went, we rocked up with our bell tent and had forgotten the pole that basically makes the tent stand up in the middle. And we had to go and borrow basically some sort of makeshift thing for the tent, but so many people were laughing at us with our tent that weekend.
Yeah. It's not one of my final moments, but as long as it's singing afterwards, Claire, that's
yeah, we're going camping this summer, Claire, is the answer to that one. Yeah. Alec Stanek on Instagram says, in a sentence, when do you know it's the right time to quit or move on? Ooh, that's an interesting one to squeeze into a sentence. I mean, do you have any thoughts on that, Emin?
When it just makes no sense.
Ooh.
Yeah, for me, it's, you know, what happens is I stop when I know it makes no sense continue. And I think that's always been my mantra. So, you know, there's lots of things in my life. If I look back, I know that one day I wake up and go, that makes no sense, and I quit. So it's something that you know intuitively, and it's then whether or not you choose to go down that path or not. But in my case, too much has happened in my past to know that I know when that point reaches me. When that point reaches, you know, the situation, this is it, stop, move on. And that's how I know. But yeah.
I love it. I think for me, I mean, it is a similar thing, but I think I know it's right, the right time to quit or move on when whatever it is that I'm doing, much as I might rationalize about certain elements of it, in the fuller sense, it is not meeting my emotional needs and it's not allowing me to be in alignment with my values. So basically, it's just not allowing me to be my fullest self. And that doesn't make sense to me either. So that's when I know that it's time to quit or move on. Anola asks, when did you know you were right for each other? I don't want to say the one, but when did you know when there was a click / spark?
That's a good question. I think we had something similar the last time. I don't remember what I said then, so I might sort of not be repeating the same thing. But I think I mentioned at the time that when we first met, I don't know if I did or not, so I might be getting myself in trouble now. But I think when we first met, I was coming out of a relationship. I had come out of a relationship that I thought was going to be going somewhere that it didn't go. And I think I sort of, I always knew therefore that I was going to just be kind of relaxed about what happened next and just kind of have a think about, you know, well, not have a thing, but just sort of have a relaxed relationship. And what I mean by that is it's not like dating somebody, but it was just about not trying to push an agenda before the agenda needed to be pushed. And I think, so when we met, I think that's sort of that calmness about it, that relaxation about it. Then things just fit, you know, things then begin to fit into place and you just realize, well, actually, you know what, there's nothing wrong here. There's nothing to change here. There's nothing I need to change in myself. I'm comfortable with who I am. So in that point, I think I knew, therefore, it's a gradual thing, but I think having that calm serenity back when I went to the relationship with you meant it was easy for me to just transition and still be myself. But then all of a sudden it was like, wow, actually, you know what? And this is great. So yeah, it wasn't an epiphany. It was just something that gradually happened and things just fit into place. And so I couldn't ever pinpoint on one thing. I'm sure if I thought back to it, there might be one incident, but nothing comes to mind.
So I think the calmness for me was a factor in noticing that it was very different with you. I, like you, didn't kind of come in with like, oh, it's got to be this or that or whatever. But what was nice is that in total contrast to previous involvements, I wasn't trying to think totally ahead into the future. I wasn't looking for there to be like this crazy chemistry. Instead, there was this really lovely calm. And that, in a way, I guess, it fueled a spark with us as well, in the sense of there was such a calmness that it made being together really enjoyable. So like you, I don't think there's this one moment where I can go, oh, like that was the thing. But what I kept noticing from literally like the first date was just how calm it was and how comfortable we were with each other and just having a laugh and enjoying each other's company. And that hasn't actually changed. That's actually something that I enjoy about our relationship, is that whatever that is, that calm, that I guess that spark that's underneath that continues, you know, it keeps going.
And one of the things I will add to that as well is that we ended up then around a group of people, friends, who also got on. And I think it created a bubble that, you know, and these are people who are still, we're still very good friends with to this day. And I think having that sort of group also meant that, you know, you didn't have to think about, oh, my friend's going to, you know, they're going to get on. You know, things around it was just good. So I think that was important, I think. I think the friendship side as well that we had with other people also helped contribute to that, because we could be ourselves in any group. And once you're able to feel comfortable with somebody in that situation like that, then.
Yeah, and actually, I think the being ourselves thing is important in the sense of something that is pointed out to us by various people in our lives. So people who've known us individually before you and I have known each other, is that you and I are very accepting of each other, in the sense that we've never been trying to change, you know, each other. We've never felt we have to change ourselves for the other. And so we're very relaxed with each other and unabashedly ourselves, I guess. And I think that when you are in a relationship where you can see and hear each other and evolve, and there is no sense of judgment, I've never felt that in our relationship. I think that you can only kind of go to good places from there. So we're coming into the last kind of couple of questions here. Yeah, this is actually the last question. Does M read Baggage Reclaim and or take any advice or life lessons from it? What has he learned from it and from you?
No, I don't read Baggage Reclaim. There's a very simple reason for that. When we first met, I didn't know anything about Natalie or what she did. I didn't know about her blog. So she chose not to tell me about this, and that was fine. I knew she did something, but I didn't know the details behind it. And that Christmas, she finally gave me the website, and I was able to go on there and see what she did. And I actually remember a lot of my friends, because we kind of knew what she did, but not the context of what she did, if that makes sense. So I knew she wrote about relationships, I knew she wrote blogs, but I didn't really know the extent to in terms of how that, you know, what she actually did wasn't clear to me. So I never looked at the website. And I think when she then gave it to me, of course I went on there and I had a look, and I had a look around. And over the years, I've sort of gone on the site periodically and had a look. But I think I realized it's your domain. And I think that it's something that it's your domain in terms of what you do. And, you know, we've seen people randomly in the streets who've come up to you and said, oh my God, you write the most amazing thing. Your wife does this, your girlfriend at the time does this. And you're thinking, wow, she must be quite powerful with her words and the way she says things. But I think it's such a conscious decision to sort of say, look, you know what, let's just have that separation. It's not, I'm not interested in that. And I do intend to read this book, by the way. And I did buy it for a reason. So I'm just finally finishing the other book I'm reading, and then I'll be going on to this. But I will read this, because I think actually there's going to be things that I'm sure I can learn about myself. But no, I've never read Baggage Reclaim. It's not because I think anything of it. It's just more right at the beginning, we had that boundary. And I never crossed it because I understand this is what she does. It's not reflective of our relationship. You know, it's reflective of her past, the experiences, etc., but not necessarily what we were going through. So nothing, I didn't really want to read something that would cloud any judgment I may or may not have. So no, to answer your question, no, I haven't read it.
Not actively. Because what he does do is, you know, he's dipped in and checked out, and instead checked it out, and then he shared it with, you know, he tells people, you know, about Baggage Reclaim. You know, he tells his colleagues, and or his colleagues come to him and are like, is it your wife that writes this? So I guess any learnings he gets from me is more in the...
there's enough life experiences. So, well, I mean, the one thing I made a joke about this the last time, but again, I repeat that. I think there's some times when we do have arguments or discussions, maybe not arguments, but let's say, you know, where certain terminologies is used and I don't know what it means and I feel like I have to Google it. But I know if I'd used baggage reclaim, I would have understood exactly what those terms meant in the context. But no, other than that, it's...
Have you learned anything from any of this? Like from baggage reclaim?
Well, I think in some level, maybe subconsciously I have, because there's some things I know I don't do anymore. I do now, but no, I can't say for sure I can pinpoint something specific. But
you're more emotionally aware, I think.
Yeah, exactly. I think I'm an emotional aware person. Some people may laugh at that, those who know me, but yeah, I think I try to be emotionally aware.
Thank you, everyone, for sending in your questions. I mean, I had, you know, also like a lot of messages, you know, the via email, just basically thanking me for doing the podcast, you know, thanking you, Emin, for encouraging me to do the podcast, saying about how much you're going to miss it. I am going to miss it. I mean, I can't believe that this is that final episode. And I want to say a huge thank you to everyone who has taken the time to listen to the podcast, and actually not just the podcast, but to read the blog and to buy my books and to share my work. And also an extra thank you to those of you who I receive a lot of these messages say that you have listened to every single episode of the podcast, sometimes several times over. The podcast isn't going anywhere. It is there for you to listen to. You know, please enjoy it, share it, tell people about it. Just because it's stopping doesn't mean that what I shared in it isn't of value. I appreciate you all. I appreciate you letting me be in your ears for all of these years, and I guess in your hearts too. I'm super grateful to have been able to do this, and I also at the same time know that this is the perfect time for me to stop. I don't know what the future holds. I want to give myself space to feel out what I want to do. And as I said, you can keep up with that at on my Substack, which will be at natalielu.substack.com. But also I have my website, natalielu.com as well. And you can keep up with me on Instagram. I'm at natlu, N-A-T-L-U-E on there as well. Please do keep in touch, you know, reach out, say hello. Don't be a stranger. Thank you so much, Em, for accompanying me through this final episode. It's starting to feel very emotional.
Yeah, I think I can hear it, so maybe it's time to say goodbye.
Look at you getting all uncomfortable with emotions.
No, I'm all good with it. I'm good.
Okay, well, look, I want to go and say something not deep and philosophical, but I can feel myself sort of welling up. And this is so hard, but also so right. I can't believe that this is the final time I'm doing this. Thank you so much for listening. I'm not going to see you next time because it is the final episode. And take really good care of you. If you'd like to say hi, or you want to let me know what you thought of an episode, or want to suggest a topic, the best place to get a hold of me is on Instagram. I'm at natlue. That's N-A-T-L-U-E. And you can find links to it and all my other social channels in the show notes at baggagereclaim.co.uk/278. A full list of episodes is available at baggagereclaim.co.uk/podcast, where you can also find out how to subscribe, as well as how to rate and review the show. If you've enjoyed the show and you haven't done so already, then I'd love it if you could rate and review it in whichever podcast player you listen in. I don't run adverts or take sponsorship on the show, so if you'd like to support my work further, please check out my books and courses at baggagereclaim.com. The original theme tune was composed by my little brother Sean O'Hall, and the refresh composition is by Sunshine Bowler.